the rise and fall of an empire.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Mike Kermode here with Darren Prasad, and welcome to another episode of Canucks Mafia. Hey yo, what is up, everybody? Episode 55, the double nickel. As always, I'm Mike Kermode, and I'm joined by my co-host Darren Prasad. Darren, how are you today, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Yeah, it's we have I'm looking forward to this episode. I mean there's a million stories circling the Canucks, most of them bad and terrible. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll dive into all of that, man.
Yeah, so we, you know, obviously the big news is yesterday Bruce Boudreau was officially let go. We knew the writing had been on the wall for weeks and weeks, in a situation that was really handled just so poorly and unprofessionally by the organization. But we do have a super special guest. We have Patrick Johnson from the Province Sports, who's going to join us later on the show and talk all about that whole Boudreau situation and whatnot. So we'll leave that for now. But, you know, we haven't talked about the guy who's coming in, right? The guy who's replacing Bruce Boudreau, and that's Rick Tocchet. Now, to me, he's kind of a polarizing figure, right? On one hand, seems like this kind of hard-nosed, straight-to-business guy who may be able to motivate and get the best out of his players, but doesn't have a great track record as a coach. There's kind of a noted history of his past, right, with gambling issues, alleged mob ties. Let's just say polarizing political positions. But you know, all that stuff aside, this is about bringing in a guy who can turn this franchise who has a history of being a loser for the last decade, and hopefully, you know, putting a stamp on things, and no excuses for Rutherford and Alvin anymore. This is their guy. So just kind of, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on him as the hire, and how this could play out?
My thoughts on this are that it just doesn't matter to me who the guy is currently at this moment. And I think that shouldn't matter or be the priority for Canucks fans, primarily because I don't really think changing the coach does a whole lot here. Sure. I mean, is Tocchet a more defensively minded coach? Yeah. Is he known for, you know, having a better, you know, one of Rutherford's favorite words on all of his interviews, structure? Yeah. I mean, he's I would say he's a more, or has a reputation for being a better defensive positioning and structure based coach. Sure. Right. But I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have the guys who can play like that. And as we know, I don't think coaching has been the problem here. Right. I mean, even back when Travis Green was coaching here, like you and I talked about it, like, did I agree with everything Travis Green was doing? No, I had issues with, you know, lineup decisions and, you know, all this kind of stuff, like normal things that you see with coaches and maybe disagree with them on. But what was the bottom line underlying problem is that the personnel isn't very good. Like, is Rick Tocchet going to suddenly come in and, you know, tell Tyler Myers not to make a bad pinch every game, which he does like twice a night? I mean, I'm sure Travis Green told him not to do that. I'm sure Bruce Boudreau at some point has been like, Hey, Tyler, don't, you know, if you don't have anyone supporting you, maybe don't pinch. But like these things just continue to happen. So, I mean, I just don't see how Rick Tocchet is going to get you know, much more out of this lineup. But I think the key word, that the key phrase I just used there, is this lineup. I think if you're looking at Rick Tocchet and you want to properly evaluate him as a coach, I think we're going to need to do that after, or if and when some improvements are made to the blue line, right? Because you can want to play with as much structure as possible. And look, I do think they will be better defensively. Like I do expect that, you know, whether it's a new coach bump, I mean, that's enough to get results these days in the NHL, as we saw last year with Boudreau. So I think you add in a new coach bump, you add in a coach that is you know, going to be harder on his guys and, you know, in their own zone. So yeah, I think they'll be better defensively in the long term. Does Rick Tocchet versus Bruce Boudreau being the coach matter? No, because, I mean, what is playing with a better structure going to get this Canucks team? 6 more points at the end of the year? 5 mm-hmm. more points? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it for me. It's a weird time to do this coach change, because you're at the stage right now in this season where the season's over. It's a lost season. This team and Aquilini will never understand this, but it doesn't benefit you to get that new coach bump and go on a run right now. It doesn't benefit you. Say the Canucks do what they did last year and under this new coach, just go on fire and start playing at like a 700 pace. That's going to put them 5 points out of the wild card. And now you're picking 15th instead of top 10. One thing you do want to see is clean up that locker room, right? Like, and I actually liked Tocchet's comments at that presser yesterday. I thought that he said kind of all the right things and, you know, talked about, becoming a cohesive unit, obviously playing smarter defensive hockey. He's bringing in two really good former defensemen, right? Sergei Gonchar and Adam Foote. And actually
probably could literally be the top pair on the Canucks right now, honestly. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So you know what I would like to see is a coach who has the balls. I know Boudreau recently sat OEL and I think he got absolutely lauded for that. Like, that needed to happen. That needs to happen with a guy like Tyler Myers. Like you said, Tyler Myers, is he going to suddenly change the way he plays? Probably not. But can you find a coach who can keep him accountable and say, dude, we've talked about this and you're still doing it. So sit this one out, watch from the press box, and really think about how you're going to play next game, right? And I hope Tocchet has the balls and the stones to do that. Seems like a guy who does. JT Miller, is he going to accept, you know, he talked about JT Miller specifically in that press conference. Is he going to accept JT Miller's kind of shitty body language and outbursts towards teammates and things like this? There was I don't know if you saw the video of Miller smashing his stick on the board or while in the players' bench, and Andre Kuzmenko literally like sitting beside him, you see his body language and he mouths like, oh my God, like here we go again. And EP40 like rolls his eyes. Like, these guys are sick of that shit, right? And you need a coach who's going to grab Miller by the collar in that spot and be like, dude, you're a leader here. Pick it up, you know? And you want to snap like that? How about you back check next time? Something like that. So perhaps he helps in kind of creating a better locker room mentality and attitude. But like you said, Rick Tocchet isn't coming over here with $6 million of cap space. Rick Tocchet isn't coming over here with a top 4D man or two, right? Like, the roster is what it is. That's on Alvin and Rutherford and Benning still. And he's got his work cut out for him. He's coming to a shitty roster with shocking amounts of off ice drama. A team who is obviously weak, mentally weak. So for me, what I want to see from Tocchet is just like clean some of these things up. So a bit of the defensive zone lapses, a bit of the, you know, attitude and mentality towards the team. And also learn, like, stop giving up these leads. And he talked about that as well, right? Like if Rick Tocchet could come in and make this team more structured, that when they're up two or three goals, they find a way and find some confidence to hang on to that lead. I think that, you know, going into next year and the year after that, when perhaps the team is improved and there's a better chance of success, that team has now kind of have that mentality and that kind of strength behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I as I said before, like, I don't think Rick Tocchet matters in the long term and in, you know, the overall like future and progression for this team. That being said, you know, one area where I think he's going to absolutely help is just making the Canucks more difficult to play against, right? Like, and what I mean by that is just keeping the work rate as high as possible, you know, in the defensive zone for the Canucks, right? And holding guys accountable, like you said. That's, you know, I do think that this group, I mean, this core group, what is it, their third coach? So, I mean, look, like, it's, you know, how many more coaches are you going to give this group, right? I mean, it's just not getting it. It just hasn't gotten done. And, you know, it seems like what they need is somebody who is going to, I don't know if I want to say rule with an iron fist, but like you said, keep guys honest, right? And if guys make a mistake, you know, maybe you don't freak out the first time, but if it's a repetitive mistake, and that's the thing that's killed the Canucks this year, it's just been, they just make the same mistakes, right? Like Patrick Johnson, you know, we'll hear a little bit from him on how he feels about this too, but there's just a lot of similar problems the Canucks have almost nightly in their own zone that, you know, like these are things that, you know, professional NHL level players, you know, sure, maybe they make the mistake once, you know, then they go 20 games and then they make it again, right? That's normal, right? Everybody has a bad night. Everybody makes a mistake here and there. But if you're making positional errors, and if you're picking up the wrong guy and leaving guys wide open in the slot or whatever the case is, you know, almost every night or every other night, I mean, that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable at this level. And the penalty kill is a perfect example of that, right? It's completely buried them this year, right? Like just completely snowed them under this year. You know, almost historically bad, if not historically bad. And that's an example of something that's been a problem all year. It's been the same issues. It's been bad sticks, not blocking out lanes, you know, not clearing the front of the net and giving guys, you know, way too easy an entry into the zone. And they haven't done anything to solve those problems, right? So that's when it becomes extremely disappointing and frustrating, you know, as a fan, when you start and see, you know, that's when I think you can start questioning accountability, when it's the same problems over yeah. and over and over again. And that's where I think Rick Tocchet can help.
Yeah, because that has been the issue. And like, I agree. I want Tocchet to come in and help these guys be better pros, basically, right? Work on their mistakes. Be a teacher. Like, I feel like that gets lost in the NHL these days. Like, you hear about the value of a goalie coach, like a guy like Ian Clark, and how he literally makes people better, even at the NHL level. And you don't hear a lot about it. Maybe it happens around the league, but like, why are we not sitting there with Tyler Myers with video for hours every day saying, look here, look here, look here. And then focusing with him in practice. Now, do I give a shit about Tyler Myers? No, but would I like to see that happen with guys like Quinn Hughes and EP and these younger guys who may be a part of this team for, you know, further down in the long run? But obviously, you know, we're getting later into the season. Bo Horvat may be, you know, this year's biggest trade chip in the whole NHL. Depending on who you hear, who you listen to, or who you believe, like the Canucks may or may not have truly given their final offer to Bo Horvat, right? Now, I think if we wanted to speak fantasy land, we can talk about what we expect or what we'd like for a trade offer or a return package for Bo Horvat. And you know, for you and I and many Canucks fans, that would include prospects and picks and whatnot. we already know that that's basically not happening, right? Like Rutherford has come out and said, and granted, he has come out and said things publicly and changed course, and his actions have been different in the past. But this is going to be a trade, if the trade is the route they choose, where you're going to see, you know, young NHL players probably involved. Where do you think this goes? Do you think that it's an inevitability that Horvat is traded by the deadline? Or do you think that, you know, the Canucks are going to circle back with someone with another offer here and try to get him signed long term?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Rick Dhaliwal was just on and said that they did talk, you know, the Canucks and Pat Morris, you know, Bo's agent. I believe he's supposed to be in town tomorrow. So, I mean, all kind of signs point to them continuing to talk and maybe making one last push. I mean, you know what? The funny part of all of this is I think that the odds, if somebody were to ask me like earlier in the year, maybe maybe before training camp or something like that, you know, do you think Bo wants to be a Canuck and wants to stay here? I would have said, you know what, despite everything, despite all the losing, I think Bo seems like a committed guy and he seems like a family guy and, you know, all of that. I could see him really wanting to stay and kind of build on whatever this is and keep his family here. With just so much more losing that's happened and with, you know, the whole Boudreaux situation and just the complete circus. And honestly, like with some of these teams that are going to be interested, you know, you hear the Boston Bruins and you hear the Carolina Hurricanes and, you know, and even the Seattle Kraken. I mean, even though, you know, I wouldn't say the Kraken are on the same level as the Hurricanes and the Bruins, obviously. But, I mean, imagine Bo Horvat going to Boston and having a chance to win a Stanley Cup. Like, you're trying to tell me that would not. And then, you know, and I don't know whether the Bruins would be interested in him as a rental or not. But, I mean, the Bruins are probably the number one cup contender. I mean, look at their record. So they're clearly going to go all in to win this year. So, I mean, if I'm Bo, you know, do I want to be here now after everything that's happened? And not only what's gone on here, but what the potential is for leaving, right? Like I said, Boston and Carolina, great chance at winning the cup. Seattle, they've been a bit of a quiet contender in this whole space, in this whole Bo market. Sure, maybe the chances of winning a cup in Seattle are nowhere near as good as they are in those other two markets I just mentioned. But you go to a new organization, you get a fresh start. You don't have to move your family completely across the continent. Seattle's very close to here, right? It's not a complete lifestyle change. Like there's all these things. So I think, you know, it may reach a point here. Wouldn't surprise me if the Canucks can want whatever they want, but maybe Bo's done. Maybe Bo's just like, listen, A, I want to go win a cup, and B, if you guys were showing me any, and I underline any signs of a plan or progress, sure, maybe you could convince me to stick around with the right money and the right term, but maybe he's just done. And the only way he would stay is if the Canucks overpaid. Thankfully for the Canucks, they don't have the ability, because of the way the cap has been managed here, and that's probably a good thing that they can't overpay him. But yeah, that's my take on it. And I think an underrated possibility here that's not getting talked about enough is what Bo wants. Forget about what the team wants for a second, because he has just as much say in this as the Canucks.
So we're going to get to PJ here pretty quick. So just quickly, almost yes or no, maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on it, but expectations for trade deadline and the rest of the season here. So I'll throw out a guy's name. You let me know if you think that they will be traded or kept or whatever the case may be. Let's start with Andre Kuzmenko.
Should be traded, will be kept.
And eventually re-signed?
Yes. Okay. Shouldn't be. He should be dealt, but he will be kept and re-signed.
Yeah,
I hope I'm wrong.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. It's that same mentality where the Canucks will often do the opposite of what we think or what we want. Luke Shen.
I think Luke Shen gets traded, and that's primarily only because everything we've heard from some of the guys who are the most connected to the team like Dolly Wall and Thomas Drantz, that the Canucks have not had any real negotiations with him. So I think he gets moved.
Brock Besser.
I don't think Besser gets moved. I just don't see a team. I mean, I'm going to say no. The only way I see it happening is if the Canucks retain salary. So I'm going to say no, because I don't see how they're able to do that.
Connor Garland.
I think Connor Garland gets moved. I think, I'll leave it at that. I think yes. I don't think the return is going to be as good or good at all. It might even just be a straight, I think they're going to have to either retain a little bit of money, or ideally take a little bit of a bad contract back. But I believe Garland and Shen will be moved.
Interesting. Okay. Now, Darren, we're implementing a new segment for our show. It's a betting segment. You know, sports betting is just become so huge. You and I both do it. Most of our friends do it. We're lucky enough, we partnered up with BetStamp. And BetStamp is a site in which, because we've talked about this before, where, you know, we wish that we knew in advance where the best odds are for specific bets that we want to make. If you only use one sports book, you only have the whatever odds they provide, right? So you and I came across BetStamp. It's essentially the Trivago of sports betting, where, you know, Trivago is you want to find a hotel this weekend, you go onto Trivago and it shows you all the different prices for the hotel from each and every site. So that's exactly what BetStamp is. So for example, do you have anything set up for betting for today?
Absolutely. It's for tomorrow. Blackhawks and Canucks, Rick Tocchet's first game, behind the bench, playing a pretty bad, obviously one of the worst teams in the league, in the Chicago Blackhawks. I'm line shopping, man, line shopping with BetStamp. I think tomorrow I'm pretty confident on a Canucks victory. So, you know, I mean, using BetStamp right now, I'm looking at it. The best odds, for a Canucks win, you're going to want to go and use power play. Use a power play sports book. You get 1.5 for the Canucks. Comparatively speaking, if you were to make that same bet on playnow.com, you're looking at 1.43. So a pretty decent difference there. I'm taking the Canucks at 1.5 on the money line tomorrow against the Blackhawks. Rick Tocchet's first game. Hey, by the way, if anybody wants to use BetStamp, use the referral code Canucks Mafia when you sign up. What about you, Mike? What do you have for today?
Yeah, so same thing. You know, obviously Canucks podcast, we want to focus on them, and I do believe that the Canucks are going to win tomorrow because Rick Tocchet's first game, a little bit of a new energy in both the crowd and in that locker room. And let's not pretend that they're playing the Chicago Blackhawks, and the Chicago Blackhawks are pretty shitty, right? So using BetStamp, I can see, as you mentioned, power play has the best odds for a Canucks outright win. But I want to also throw the over on that, because both the Blackhawks and the Canucks, you know, they, let's be honest, they suck defensively, and they Canucks score a lot of goals and allow a lot of goals. Chicago allows a lot of goals, don't score a ton, but they do have guys like, you know, Kane and Taves and some good players. And so I see that the best odds for doing the over on 5.5 is on FanDuel compared to other sites at -124. Comparatively, you know, at BetRivers, it's 109. And at 20 bet, it's -120. TonyBet, -120. BetVictor, -125. So I'm going to parlay that. So I'm going to use FanDuel, and I'm going to parlay that Canucks win and the over of 5.5 goals That's going to give me an odds of plus 128, and my $10 bet can have a decent return.
Well, look, don't be upset if you take our advice and it doesn't work out. And you know what? It's a good segue into another thing you can do on BetStamp. You can actually sign up on BetStamp, as mentioned, using the Canucks Mafia referral code. When you sign up, you can actually follow winning bettors, two people that are not like us, guys that win bets. So yeah, check it out. Mike, you know, once again, we've got PJ coming up here. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. And we've got Patrick Johnson coming up here. So stay tuned for that. All right, Mike. Well, we've got a super exciting guest today on the episode. Very, very well connected and plugged into all things Vancouver Canucks. Patrick Johnston from the Vancouver Province. Patrick, how are you?
I'm good. All things. Wow. That's. I mean, that's. There's a lot to deal with when you think about Canucks sports and entertainment. So thank you for the high praise.
Yeah, I feel like this half season, there's been enough news in this half season for the Canucks than there usually is in, you know, five or six seasons. So all things, man. Lots to get into, as mentioned. You know, let's dive right in. You know, obviously the big story, Boudreaux out, talk it in. You know, I mean, one thing I wanted to start off with is just what took so long to get this done, right? Was this, you know, ownership and management not aligned? Was this ownership not wanting to pay another coach? Was this, you know, we all know, like, Boudreaux was Francesco's guy. He's, you know, he went and hired him. You know, what, why did this play out the way it did, and why did this take so long?
Well, you know, I mean, I think we all are well aware of kind of how things have gone here in the last, I don't know, decade. Nothing ever seems to take a straight line. And I think in many ways that kind of is how it tracks. I would say, why did it take so long? I think that's a question we're going to be digging into for a long time. But, you know, I mean, I think everyone's kind of gut is that, I mean, Frank Cervelli is going and saying that, you know, essentially this has been a block by ownership, and that wouldn't, I don't have that, but it wouldn't surprise me. It's been obviously a challenging situation for a long time for management. We certainly know that the Benning era had a lot of challenges from that, and obviously Mike Gillis is, you know, he talked about Tortorella in the past and trying to trade. You know, I think we all understood that there was a lot of sort of the Kessler trade we tried to have happen. So I mean, it's just a long thread going back to that. I think more than anything, that's my kind of. I mean, that's what my instinct tells me. And just based on people, I know, and the frustrations you hear of people, you know, who have either been in that organization in the past or, you know, and currently are, it's disappointing. You know, I think more than anything, if you're a Canucks fan, it should be disappointing, because, you know, I think that the outpouring support for Boudreaux that we saw on the weekend was such a, you know, sort of in line with exactly that, you know, people want to believe. I mean, you guys are running a podcast, right? You guys care. You're interested. You know, this is a fan thing. People want to believe in what's happening. And, you know, so when you see a coach who is, you know, in the end wasn't getting the results, I think people understand that, you know, change happens. But to get strung along the way he was for 2 months, you know, and Boudreaux himself saying he thought he was going to get fired in November. And we all kind of thought maybe, I mean, I was never sure if that was going to happen. But I was just like, you know, we could tell Jim Rutherford's not happy. So in normal circumstance, you move on. And certainly after sort of the groundwork that had been laid there of sort of frustration from management on how, you know, Boudreaux had details in Boudreaux's, you know, how he'd been coaching last year. You go back to that last year, right? Like, it's kind of a through line. It's hard to think that this is the, you know, if anyone doesn't think that this is a messy situation at the very top, I don't know what to tell them, because all the crumbs are there, all the evidence is there. And, you know, it's going to be, it stinks to not, you know, we were talking about this, a couple of reporters I were talking about this, way, way more interesting to write about wins, way, way more interesting to write about teams that are sort of have forward progress. it's not actually that fun or interesting to write about teams that are stuck in the mud, as which perhaps is even kind to where the Canucks find themselves at, but that's where we are.
It is. It's kind of exhausting, right? Like we've talked about that on our podcast too, just like it's become so negative and we don't have a lot of positive things to talk about. And I remember, you know, the 2011 Cup run and some years leading up to that, where I was passionate in the sense that my friends who are Flames fans and Oilers fans, like we'd like fight. We'd get in legitimate like arguments and battles over hockey. And now we don't fight because they're like, dude, your team is a joke. And I'm like, yeah, no, you're right. I know it sucks. But so we're hoping to one day, you know, have this podcast and be able to speak passionately in a positive manner and talk about wins and potential trade deadline acquisitions and these types of things. Right. But I think a takeaway for me has been kind of the constant in the last decade, whether it's been the Benning regime or now the Rutherford Alvin regime, is just the lack of communication, right? And that probably stems pretty high up in the organization and trickles down. So one thing that was a real noticeable takeaway for me during that press conference yesterday was Rutherford basically blaming the media for speculation when the reality is all of the speculation was accurate. And I don't know if we need to give him a dictionary and show him what speculation actually means or what, but I mean, the guy has made some public comments about his displeasure of the coach, right? And some of the systems and certain things. Another thing that was, you know, speculated was that Rick Tocchet's had a contract out with TNT that was 4 weeks or something. So maybe the team said, you know, we want you, here's the thing. And he says, well, I have to give my 4 weeks here at TNT. And then that's where the kind of lengthy wait, like we all kind of knew it was coming, but that's why it had to wait. So just your thoughts on the overall lack of communication, Rutherford's comments about the speculation and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of summed it up. I mean, the moment you start criticizing your coach openly, I'm not sure what you expect's going to happen. And then, you know, in the end, everything, as you said, like, I mean, the other thing, I think everyone gets it, you know, part of the game is, you know, there's a collection of national insiders. The reason why they're insiders, they talk to people in the game. And, you know, you can see, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I think it's pretty clear oftentimes where their information comes from. Sometimes you don't know. I mean, I know this as a reporter, there's things I know that, you know, if I were to ever tell people where it comes from, they might be surprised. But, you know, to suggest that this has all been a sort of a media storm, I think is a complete misreading of who you guys are. You know, fans aren't stupid. Fans can see. Fans know what's up. I mean, they even if you guys had no speculation to follow along, no commentary to follow along, you know, you fans yourselves could sit back and say, well, this team isn't winning. Why isn't this team winning? And then you could start looking around at sort of decisions that were made, the results that were made. The fact the coach, you know, the fact the team has won, what, twice since Christmas? It's been a bad run in a season where they have not followed up on what seemed like some success last year. Even if you don't look at the numbers, you can just look at the results. You know, obviously Boudreaux had a great run of results last year, almost made the playoffs. We're now in a spot where the team is not going to make the playoffs and the team has played badly. And, you know, this is a point I've harped on more than once. It was on Donnie and Dolly earlier. I'm going to be on with Lisa Garrison Price tomorrow. Or on Tuesday, you know, this is not a huge shocking thing, but like Steve Stamkos scores that goal on Tuesday night, standing by himself by the side of the net, having been completely lost by the defensive coverage. Well, that goal, I mean, first of all, you shouldn't be leaving Steve Stamkos alone, but that goal, that type of goal has been like a nightly issue for weeks. You know, that road trip, basically, there was a goal every night. You know, Paul Stastny scored that way on Sunday. You know, that there were definite problems with how this team was playing, that whether it's coaching or not and it's simply talent of players, fine, you can speculate on that, you can debate on that, but it all comes back to you know, people's basic understanding of how things should be. And you know, so to suggest that, oh, this is all just media fueled speculation. I mean, what? And also, sir, this is how it works. Like, your team's not going well. Everybody's going to talk about it. And there's two ways to do it. And well, to be honest, the way they've handled it, I mean, I literally, the number of people that have came to me, you know, whether they're in the game, ex-players, whatever, who have just said, like, the way that Bruce Boudreau has been treated is just not fair. It's not professional. You know, to keep him around, and while you're, you know, essentially, you know, openly criticizing him, it's just not a reasonable thing. Now that, you know, whether that's entirely on Rutherford, I mean, you can debate that question, but in the end, and that, you know, but in the end, like the scenario created the conversation, and the conversation, the media is part of that conversation, but we didn't create the conversation. We didn't create.
Yeah,
like I said, you guys are smart fans. You can see what's going on.
Yeah, Patrick, Bruce mentioned that, you know, after the game, you know, obviously there was a lot of emotions, and you know, he did talk about some players. You know, how he talked to, I can't remember, was it 15 or 16 players? He said, kind of chatted with them, and things were, you know, pretty emotional in that room. You know, do we have any insights into, you know, what that was like? But also beyond that, what are the ramifications of a situation like this for the EP40 extension, right? Because that's a big, massive thing that's looming here in the next, you know, what is it, 16, 18 months or whatever. Yeah, I mean, just your thoughts on the vibe in that room, if we have any insights into that after the game, and what the impact would be on Elias Pettersson.
Well, you know, I think frustration, and every, you know, every step of the way, there's been reasons for frustration. You go back to when everybody had COVID in 2021, you know, and the sort of feeling of abandonment, isolation that those guys had, you know, not knowing what was going on. There's a theme, you know, to sort of how the overall philosophy has been there. It's frustrating for everyone involved. You know, we heard from obviously Luke Shen. I mean, everybody went to bat for Bruce. The players recognized they didn't get the wins. This is going to happen, but everyone went to bat for Bruce in a way that, you know, you can read between the lines that they know, you know, they know what's going on, and they are as confused, frustrated, disappointed as anybody. You know, the idea of treating people right. You just treat people right. I mean, someone said to me, this is not hard. You know, running a hockey team isn't that hard. Treat people right, you know? And if that means you're honest with them, and as Boudreau himself said, you know, George McPhee called him in when he fired him in Capitals. He said, listen, they launched it. Bruce, it's not working. We're going to have to let you go. Here's why. And he said they had a long, you can make it a long chat or a short chat. You know, I mean, it's your choice. Bruce got a short chat yesterday. But, you know, the disingenuity of saying, well, we only made this decision this morning. Like, come on. Like, no, nobody believes that. And you know, there is something to how hockey people seem to think, well, you know, I know I'm not, whatever I'm telling you must be true, so you have to take it at face value. And it's just like, that's just such a naive understanding of how the world works. And, you know, so, and more, and it's particular to a subset of, I think, hockey guy from a particular era. You know, maybe it's still going to be there for a long time. Hockey is changing. The people that are involved in hockey is changing. But, you know, a guy like Elias Pettersson, he's a bright guy. You know, he's from a small town in Sweden. He's lived on his own since he was, you know, 15, 16 years old. He's learned how to live in the world. He's learned how to sort of get along, how to work, how to trust people. He made a conscious choice to switch to J.P. Barrie and Pat Brisson 2 years ago. You know, he wanted, you know, he moved to a very high profile agency, and you know, he thinks big picture, and he knows what it means to win. He's been a winner his entire life. You know, he won in Vasco, like before he came here, right? Like, you know, he's been a top player in Sweden coming up. Like, he knows what it means. He knows work ethic, what it means. Bruce, the way Boudreau talked about him, think about it, right? Like, he talked about Pettersson on Saturday again about how great this player can be. And you know, he wouldn't say that if he didn't believe in what he's seen, you know, and understand what he's seen. And so Pettersson, you know, he's smart. He's not going to say, he's not going to openly outwardly rock the boat, but he has set the standard. You know, him and his representatives have set the standard. They want to see a direction towards winning. And yeah, they can start talking about extension this summer. But you know, we've seen this before. There are guys around the league that have forced change, even if they're a restricted free agent. You know, you look at Jack Eichel, as an example, but like
Tkachuk, you
know, Matthew Tkachuk, yeah.
Exactly. Right. Like this is not a rare thing anymore. Player power is more and more a thing. That's something that Gary Bettman is terrified of, but you know, the way player power drives things in the NBA, well, it's no shock that that kind of thing is going to start coming to the NHL. And, you know, and right, you know, rightly to them, like they want to believe in where they're working. I think we all of us in our work lives, right? Like we all, I think to one degree or another, want to feel like we have some control of what we're doing. You know, we recognize it, you know, I'm a reporter. Obviously I work for a big company. I know I'm not setting the tone. I'm not setting the editorial direction, but you know, you want to believe in the people you work with. And I believe in the people I work with. That to me is yeah. Seems to be a pretty simple standard to assess how Elias Pettersson may be feeling and, you know, the sort of power that he has right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think given all of that, it's a bit concerning as a Canucks fan about where he may be, where his head's at, put it that way. But another thing that has become pretty a common theme here for the Canucks is, you know, I think when there was the regime change and the Benning regime was gone, I think there was a lot of hope for people that things were going to change, not just for the on ice product and the record of the team and whatnot, but a vision and the way the team, you know, the executives of the team can communicate to the fan base and whatnot. And for whatever reason, we haven't had that. Yeah. Rutherford gets out there and he talks and he can put together a sentence eloquently. So that's, I guess that's an upgrade, but there's no real plan ever being told, right? It's kind of, you kind of get these keywords that the management seem to kind of regurgitate and revert back to when they're talking about, but there's never any real idea of a plan. Like we know they're not rebuilding, that's evident, not sure why, but whatever, for whatever reason that's evident. But like when you speak to Alvin, the guy is a master of saying 100 words and not saying anything, right? And he's yeah. got his key phrases like the no banner in the rafters and build this brick by brick and stuff, but he doesn't ever really actually say anything the odd time he is available,
right?
As somebody who's kind of inside, is like, should the fans just expect that, you know, Horvat's going to get traded for guys who they think can help them win now, and the mandate is still to try to win this year out and make the playoffs, and next year the mandate's going to be to make the playoffs again? Like, is that what we should all really truly expect?
Well, I mean, we've seen the track record that they've shown so far. You know, they haven't made huge trades. You know, you look at picking up Riley Stillman, picking up Jack Stuznika. They're looking for roster players. Now, both those players are way down the depth chart. I would say Stuznika was a player worth taking, but you can see the bits. Like he's got hands, but you know, you can also see why Jim Montgomery just didn't want to play him anymore. There's just not enough details there. He's a fourth liner. So, you know, okay. You know, it was worth a shot in the dark, I guess. Stillman, you know, the Stillman one, I think probably is more your track there, right? Like they were not interested in keeping Jason Dickinson around. They created some cap space by doing so, by moving him along. But they gave up a draft pick, you know, it was sort of a Jim Benning special, right? Like they got rid of a problem. They picked up a player that clearly they liked. I mean, Riley Stillman's a nice guy, but in the end, he has been filling exactly the role finally that he should be, which he's the seventh defenseman. So those are tough to read. And then, you know, obviously we look at the summer, and I'm going to have to go here, so I'll just wrap up. But like, you look at how they did in the summer, you know, they added a couple pieces to try to make the team better, and like credit to them. Like, I think, you know, they were worthwhile signings. Mikheyev, obviously people I think we are right to be nervous about, just because of the fact he's a fast skater. We haven't seen him really put it up, and he had a knee injury in preseason. So, you know, is it tied all together, or is it just a case that this is a team that didn't quite know how to use him yet, and now they're going to, well, you know, he'll be an interesting player to see how, what does Rick Tocchet think of using him? Because certainly people who watched him with the Leafs are like, this guy can skate. He's got one move on the breakaway, but this guy can skate. You know, him scoring 20, 25 goals isn't an unreasonable bet. That was certainly something this organization believed. And, you know, that could still happen. But overall, the package has been trying to sort of direct towards this Pedersen-built team. You know, I don't think there is ever any – the trade is going to be an interesting one to watch. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And it'll be about how they understand their own valuations. Certainly, you know, in their efforts to trade Tyler Myers, they've gotten nowhere. And, you know, JT Miller was a discussion point, I think, last year. But I'm never sure how actually serious they were in trading him in the end. Since, you know, obviously we've seen the result, which was that they made the decision to keep him. So it's going to be definitely something really interesting to watch. And, you know, I think you guys have highlighted something. It's going to tell us a lot about what this management team, how they see the NHL and what they think they're going to be able to accomplish here in the next couple of years.
PJ, thank you so much. Thanks so much for your time. It's great having you on. Have a great rest of your day, man. And we'll catch you in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right.
Thanks, PJ.